is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Talk about an efficient investigation. I mean, does it get much more efficient than this? Almost 30 years to the day of the shooting and the death of Tupac Shakur, someone's finally been convicted. Only took 30 years. And him going on podcasts, talk shows, writing books, saying it to anyone who would listen. For the person who's allegedly responsible, who is responsible, convicted now of being responsible for handing the gun to Orlando Anderson and saying, do your thing. Only took 30 years.
Wow.
We're going to go through the verdict here. What happened in that courtroom? As this moment, 30 years in the making, has finally come about. And where does it leave us? Where does it leave us at the end of the day? Is this justice? Is everybody wants to go for justice for this, justice for that. Is this justice for Tupac Shakur? On one side of a Las Vegas courtroom on August 31st of 2026. Remember, it was 1996 when all of this story started. If you were just joining us, I was about 15. It's like we had set Shakur. Cried quietly and reached for the person behind her. Tupac's sister. On the other side, Duane Keefe D. Davis raised his fist towards the gallery as he was led away. Between them, a verdict. Guilty. First degree murder with use of a deadly weapon and the killing of Tupac Shakur. Took the jury only about 3 hours. The defense's closing argument had lasted almost two. The jury was faster than the lawyer by almost was. Not a great defense. Our client's a liar. That's pretty much all we got. He admitted all, yeah, he's full of shit, though. I mean, can you want to believe he's full of shit or you want to believe he's not? Yeah. Davis is 63 years old. He's the only person ever charged in Tupac's murder. He's now the only person ever convicted. Sentencing is set for October 13th. His son was in the courtroom when the verdict was read and covered his face with one hand. He told the judge he plans to appeal. He also asked for his phone and laptop back. Davis has been held without bail since his arrest in September of 2023, nearly 3 years in the Clark County Detention Center, waiting for a trial that lasted 9 days and a verdict that took 3 hours. Most murder convictions are built on physical evidence, a weapon, DNA, surveillance footage, a phone record that puts someone in the wrong place. This had none of that, mainly because at the time of the crime, none of that really existed as a possibility. The idea in 1996 of, let's go to the phone record, let's see where it's been tracking you at, was like, what? You're going to do what? What are you talking about, huh? Your phone's going to track you? What are you, nuts? It's a phone. Huh? Wasn't a thing. DNA technology. Also, not extremely new at the time, but a hell of a lot more behind where we are today. Go watch an Unsolved Mysteries episode from 1996 or Forensic Files and see how futuristic they're talking about the technology. It'll take you back. The 40 caliber Glock allegedly used in the shooting has never been recovered. The white Cadillac, the car prosecutors say Davis was riding in, has also never been found. Can you imagine if you're in possession of either of those things today? And I'm sure they were probably disposed of at the time. But what kind of cash that those objects might pull in for someone wanting to put them in a museum? No Fun Records Place Davis in Las Vegas on September 7th, 1996. No receipts, no surveillance footage. Investigators found a hotel bill at Davis's home during a police search, but it was undated and nobody can account for where that evidence is actually now. Suge Knight, the man who was driving the BMW when the shots came through, the only surviving eyewitness to the shooting, refused to cooperate with either side. Throughout the case, Knight has been in a California prison since 2018 on an unrelated voluntary manslaughter conviction. He would not talk to prosecutors and would not talk to the defense either. After the verdict, prosecutors dropped the gang enhancement from the charge. Chief Deputy DA Binu Palal told the court it was due to witness logistics. A former officer who would have testified for about 10 to 15 minutes had logistical issues that prevented it from happening. Thank your lucky stars, Keefe. Although it doesn't really change a lot. The conviction stands as first-degree murder with use of a deadly weapon. What the jury did have was Keefe's own voice. And at the end of the day, turns out your own voice and your own words are one of the most damning things you can have against you in court. Four recorded statements spanning 18 years, a memoir and video of Davis promoting that memoir as the real truth. The real truth, everybody, right here. Come see it. The prosecution's entire case was built from one man's words aimed right back at him. Everything else was context. The first statement was a 2008 federal proffer interview, a proffer. It works like this. A defendant facing serious charges sits down with law enforcement and tells them what he knows about other crimes and other people. In exchange, the government agrees not to use those specific words against defendants in its own case. Wink, wink. Most attorneys will be like, don't do that. Don't do that. There's a lot of loopholes in proffer agreements. Sometimes they're not even on paper. But he did. The catch is that the defendant has to tell the truth. That's the price of the deal. If he lies, the deal is off and the statements can be used against him. Davis was facing a life sentence in a federal drug case when he sat down for the proffer. So it was kind of like, well, take this. It's not the most secure agreement, but it gets you off on the drug charges, and they're telling you they're not going to go after you for these other ones if you talk about them to them for that investigation. Notice they didn't say, go write a book. Go do a podcast. Go just tell anyone and everyone this story over and over and over and over about how you basically told us about one of the most infamous murders in history, and we did nothing about it. Go tell everybody about that. That won't have any sort of repercussions. Wink, wink. That might actually trigger something. And it did. He told federal agents. He was in the Cadillac on September 7th of 1996. He told them he obtained the gun from a man named Eric Zip Martin. He told them his nephew Orlando Anderson fired the shots that killed Tupac Shakur. The second statement was a 2009 interview with Las Vegas Metro Police detectives. Retired Detective Dan Long, who conducted the interview, later testified for the defense that he could not independently verify Davis was in the Cadillac, not without relying on what Davis himself had said. The third was a 2017 Death Row Chronicles documentary on BET. The fourth was his 2019 memoir, Compton Street Legend. The defense fought to have the memoir excluded from the evidence. The book carries a disclaimer saying some facts were changed. Some. Judge Carly Kearney ruled the statements admissible, finding that Davis had adopted the material as his own by repeatedly promoting it as the real truth. During the trial, prosecutors played a clip of Davis on video doing exactly that, selling the book as the true account of what happened. Chief Deputy DA Palal built his closing argument around those four formats. Davis's accounts on that night had evolved over the years. Palal acknowledged sometimes he named the shooter, sometimes he wouldn't, but Palal argued one detail never moved. In every version across nearly two decades, Davis placed himself inside that white Cadillac. Then Palal delivered the line the prosecution has been building towards. He held up the memoir and told the jury that O.J. Simpson wrote a book called If I Did It. Dwayne Davis, Palal told them, wrote the book I Did It. O.J. hedged. Davis did not. Palal argued premeditation. The group searched for Shakur before spotting him on the road and making a U-turn. A plan, Palal said, not an impulse. And Palal closed with one ask. For nearly 18 years, Davis has told police, television networks, book authors, YouTube interviewers, and anyone who would listen that he is responsible for the murder of Tupac Shakur. Tell him you hear him by finding him guilty. 3 hours later, they did. Defense attorney Michael Snapp's closing ran almost 2 hours, though longer than his entire case presentation. When you only got so much to work with, He'd called three witnesses in a single afternoon, all former law enforcement officers. His argument was that every word Davis ever said about the killing was fiction. Snapp pointed to the inconsistencies across the four recordings and the book. In some accounts, Davis describes seeing Shakur hanging out the car window, waving to fans. Witnesses at trial testified they didn't see that. He picked up Compton Street Legend and read an excerpt aloud while reading from the text. He said the N-word in the courtroom. People in the overflow room recoiled. He compared the case to the Titanic. The ship sinking is historical fact, he argued, but the stories people tell about it are fiction. There are no facts to point to Keefe, Snaff told the jury. Not one. The paradox the fiction defense couldn't escape is this. If Davis lied in 2008, he lied to federal agents in a proffer where telling the truth was the deal. He was trying to avoid a life sentence in a drug case. Fabricating a murder confession to federal agents is its own federal crime. The defense needed 12 people to believe that Davis risked more prison time to invent a murder confession for leverage in a drug case, and then repeated that story to police a year later, to documentarians 8 years after that, and in a book under his own name 11 years after the proffer. The rebuttal, the prosecutor said, told the jury Davis was trying to beat them. Prosecutor called the case a slam dunk and told the jury not to turn their verdict into a referendum on whether investigators should have charged Davis sooner. The question, the prosecutor argued, is what Davis said and whether the jury believes it. 3 hours, that's how long they needed. Davis told federal agents what he did in 2008 and no arrest followed. Las Vegas detectives interviewed him in 2009 and no arrest followed. He appeared in a nationally broadcast documentary in 2017 describing the shooting and still no one charged him. Then published a memoir in 2019 and promoted it on video as the real truth and nothing happened. The grand jury indictment came in 2023. The arrest came on September 29th of that year, 27 years after the murder, 15 years after the proffer. Davis was walking near his home in Henderson, Nevada, when police took him into custody. Trial lasted 9 days, more than 24 prosecution witnesses and 3 defense witnesses, then 3 hours of deliberation and a conviction on first-degree murder was the case that they gave you. The evidence that convicted Davis on August 31st existed in a federal file in 2008. Davis wasn't hiding. He was on camera, on bookshelves, in police interview rooms, in documentary studios. He wasn't a fugitive, and he wasn't quiet. Every year between 2008 and 2023 is a year the state of Nevada had a recorded confession from a man who described his role in the killing of Tupac Shakur. 15 years of a man telling everyone who would listen what he did, and the system didn't act on it. Here's what I've noticed in years of covering true crime. Authorities don't like being embarrassed. They don't necessarily like people calling them out or pointing out, hey, this person's confessing to one of the biggest unsolved murder cases of the last century. Why don't you do anything about it? And when you have no good answer, other than, I don't know why we don't do anything about it, things sometimes happen. Sometimes you gotta apply the pressure. Apply the pressure from the outside through media, through all of this stuff to get things to happen. And sometimes pointing out those pain points, those embarrassment points, those things like, why didn't you do the obvious here? Like arresting the man that's consistently talking about murdering Tupac has seemingly the whole story, information nobody else really has. Why hasn't anything been done? Well, turns out, if you just give it 30 years, things might get done. The jury needed 3 hours to reach that guilty verdict. The system needed nearly 30 years to bring the case to trial. The verdict answered the question of whether Keefe D did it. Why it took so long for anyone to ask is a different question, and nobody in that courtroom can answer it. September 13th marks 30 years since Tupac Shakur died in a Las Vegas hospital at 25 years old. It's been longer now than his entire lifespan. The only person ever convicted in his murder raised his fist on the way out of the courtroom. On the other side of the room, his sister was still crying. So where does that take us? Where does that take us next in the Tupac Shakur murder saga? Is Diddy next? That's the big question everyone has. We're going to try and answer that. Got another video coming up. If you're watching this as we're releasing, another one tomorrow on the feed. And we're going to dive into that very question. Press subscribe if you're curious, because we'll take a deep dive into that lane. Does this conviction change anything over there to where Diddy, who's always said, I had nothing to do with this. These are all rumors. These are all lies that I'm connected. It's all BS. That's where he stands today. But on the record, Keefe D, the man who's now convicted of being part of the murder of Tupac Shakur, part of his story, is that he was offered $1 million to make it happen, but never collected. So what is that? Is that part of the story, part of the tale? And if it is, well, I guess we just believed the tale. We convicted him. We put him away. So what parts of the tale do we believe and do we not believe? And more importantly, what can actually be prosecuted in the court of law? We're going to talk about that tomorrow. So press subscribe as we continue the discussion on the murder of Tupac Shakur. I don't know that the case is closed yet. Not sure. You tell me your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description. We'll continue our conversation right there. Take the podcast with you. There's the QR code on the screen. Scan it. Take us with you wherever you get podcasts. We'd appreciate that. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.